Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining me for the Big Three today is the ever delightful Roxanne Lawler. Welcome, my dear friend.
Oh, it is so great to be here with you, my friend Matt.
I'm glad you say that.
Yay.
Because we're going to be in this room together for the next 45 minutes.
Looking forward to every moment.
Now, Rox, the last time you were on the Big Three, we were sitting down with Rita to talk about all the changes were happening.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of months.
Yeah.
How's that going
for
you?
How's the changes going? Oh, look, I feel like going pretty good. I'm sort of I'm steering two ships at the moment.
If everyone can see the facial expressions.
I'm doing my new job and my old job.
Yep. Love that.
Yeah. So look, you know, God is faithful and he's providing, and I know that he's going to provide what we need in the right time and the right season. So
amen.
Sticking with that.
Yeah. That's what we're going with. Yeah. And I love it. It's right. All right. Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during both our online and on-site services this past Sunday. And Roxy and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. Now, for those of you who missed it, Mark continued in our series, Seven Letters, Seven Lessons, Drawing Discipleship Teachings Out of the Book of Revelations. You can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Rox, I'm interested, what were your thoughts coming out of Mark's message on Sunday?
I thought that was a cracker word, a cracker. Loved it. Loved every moment. Look, for me, I think the challenges to the churches in Revelations, what the Smyrnites or the Smyrnians went through is just massive. And I couldn't help but think, you know, what's my life in comparison to that? I live in the Shire in Australia, even in the middle of a pandemic. I'm so well protected. You know, I don't really have the same problems that they have. And I think for me what stood out is I think my life is just a bit of a cakewalk compared to theirs. Yeah. You know, it's everything is sweet. So that was one thing. And I think, gosh, you know, there really are Christians going through some awful stuff, you know, where they are, you know, economically disadvantaged or injured or killed for their faith. And I just don't have that. And, you know, gosh, I need to be praying more for my fellow brothers and sisters in other parts of the world who are experiencing today what those Smyrnians, the Smyrnites went through thousands of years ago. That was kind of my
conviction moment. All I'm hearing is that you're a better person than me, because where you're taking the message and you're like, I need to pray more and love more for the people out there, I'm like just thinking about, well, what does this mean for me? And
that doesn't make you a worse person.
Because I think the thing for me, obviously we don't have that that economic cost, I don't believe, in the West as a result of our faith. But I did start to think, as Mark was talking, I'm like, well, what's the cultural cost? And I think that's something that we can really start to kind of grapple with and probably empathize with in a way about how the church is just moving more and more out off center to our culture and our world, and that there is a bit of a cost. And I think, you know, talking to a lot of our younger community, they really feel that cost. And so just kind of wanting to, it just got me thinking about, okay, so what does that look like? And I know that Mark's big kind of take home was we shouldn't be focusing on what we lose, but you know, it's about what we gain. But I can't help but think about what we're losing. Again, probably because I'm a terrible person, but that's okay, because I believe that there's at least one other person out there who is thinking the same thing.
Is that one of the questions, perhaps?
Hopefully. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Rox, what are our three questions today?
Ooh, we have some questions. The first one is, how do we deal with the experience of cultural loss without it becoming the focus of our faith journey?
Ooh, it's almost as if I knew that that question was in there.
Look out. Number two, what does it actually look like to experience the promise of the victor's crown? Love that crown image. Yep. Number three is, how do we live out the call of Jesus to be faithful?
Yeah, because I think particularly for question two and three, and this is why I'm kind of excited about it, because there's always these terminologies that we use in in church and in messages. And I know, like, I'm a very practical person. So, like, the imagery, yes, it's beautiful. I love the idea of a victor's crown. But what, like, yeah, I want to chew the fat a little bit. And kind of, is that a terrible,
terrible imagery? What sort of crown am I getting here? Yeah,
let's talk about that. Yeah, so I'm keen to kind of unpack those two questions because I think that's where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, I guess there's only one thing missing, and that is Mark Rader himself. So welcome, Mark, to the Big Three today.
Thanks, Matt. Hi, Rox.
Hello.
So, Rader, kick us off here. Like, what was your take home from reading this letter to, I'm not even going to try it. Like, Rox has been trying to pronounce.
The Smyrnines.
They're
not Smurfs. I know that. Yeah. That's all I got.
It's Smyrna. The second letter. Or whatever. The second letter
in Revelation.
Church at Smyrna.
Yeah. What was your take home reading that? Like, obviously we got your message, but what's your.
Yeah, I think as Rox was saying, at one level, there's not a lot of connection between my experience and that of that church. It's quite disconnected in lots of ways, but I think the challenge to pay more attention to what's gained than what's lost,
yeah,
I think is the take home for me. That whole, you know, turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, let him fill your horizon so that we're kind of fully aware of that. But you know, how to do that becomes kind of, you know, part of the question.
Part of the big three, some would even
say. That's it.
Well, what a segue. Let's get into the big three. Well, Rader, like I was saying before, a big part of your message was we should not be looking at what is lost as followers of Jesus, but what is gained in the fullness of a life lived with Jesus. And I could hear myself kind of going, yes, like I totally agree, 100%. But I guess I'm fully aware that there is still that experience of loss for so many people and it can sometimes, you can't just kind of put that away, I guess. So our first question is, how do we deal with that experience of cultural loss, for lack of a better word, without it becoming the focus of our faith journey?
Well, I mean, let me start with a question.
Oh, that's not to the two of you. That's not how this works. We ask you the question.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let me make a statement and then put a question mark on the end of it. What would you say are the sorts of things that we stand to lose, right? So like the community of faith at Smyrna, loss of independence, loss of economic standing, loss of, you know, their honorable position in that community. But like when we talk about what we lose here, like what are the sorts of things that kind of spring to mind? Because I think that's an important place to start.
I think for me, like in my own personal experience, like I think I found that I lost credibility. So, you know, my background is in social work. I worked in government and there was a real sense of you're an educated individual. How can you believe that? And there was almost a loss of credibility and almost a loss of professional respect because it's like, like I think Matt can do a good job, but he also believes this. And
he's also a Christian, so he can't be that bright.
That's right. but that was, and I remember, like I remember a number of people kind of being like, I just really don't get how you can believe that.
Yep.
So I think that.
Yep.
I also think, it's that personal perception. I think is where you will experience or where I know I have and I know, you know, hearing other people's stories that they feel like they've lost it, how people perceive them, the kind of person the picture that people build up in their mind when they hear you're a Christian and what that means.
Yeah, that you must be super judgmental or whatever the case might be.
You're a massive jerk. Yeah, pretty much.
And they don't, I think to some degree then you don't get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
People kind of jump to that before they really know one way or the other.
They apply this stereotype really quickly. Yeah. And I think that becomes a real barrier because it's that whole, well, I don't want you to assume, I don't want you to prejudge.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that's part of the reason why we're finding so many Christians, I think we talked about this last week, like kind of go into that silence.
Yep. A little bit.
But I'd say that's, they're the things that jump to my mind.
Rox?
Yeah, I think we've got to be careful in that we're not actually mourning the loss of power. Sure. Like, I think that's a significant thing. There is, like, we can fall into persecution complexes, mm-hmm. like to think that we are being persecuted, mm-hmm. when really we've actually occupied a really privileged place in society, and that's been readjusted, and we're not dealing with that. So I think we've got to be really careful.
Like a kid who's had his toy taken off him.
Or just we've been, you know,
complains
top of the
that
tree.
He only has five other toys.
That we've had this respect, and that, you know, like a minister might have been respected once upon a time, and now maybe that's having a bit of a readjustment. And I think we've got to not confuse loss of positional power and cultural capital with actual persecution, because I think they're different.
Yeah, they're different, but I think that it's certainly a loss, though.
It is a loss.
You know, and I think some of our younger people in particular would not be thinking so much about that, because they've never lived in a period of time when the church had that kind of influence. Yeah. But I think the other thing that springs to mind for me is the kind of what we will miss out on.
Yeah.
You know, like, you think about all the experiences in life that you're supposed to have as a young person, right? You know, sexuality and, you know, experimental drugs or like whatever it is, like you know, the good life.
Pub crawls? I don't
whatever
know.
Whatever it
what's part of that?
You know, but all that kind of stuff, that there's certain things that we're like, no, we're not going to, you know, that's not what we're involved in. So some of those sorts of losses. Now, there's not as many as there used to be, you know, when, you know, like I hear some of our older congregation members talking about, you know, back in the 50s and the 60s, and, you know, makeup was like a no-no, and, you know, dancing, cards, going to the movies, like all that kind of stuff, sport on Sundays. There was a lot more stuff that you were like, I miss out on that.
Yeah.
But there was also a kind of a cultural understanding around that, that you were not alone in that, so you tended not to be ostracized. And I think why I wanted to start with a question is I think we have to identify what the loss is, because I think sometimes we can jump to persecution a little bit and kind of go, oh, we have it so hard. But you have to almost stop and say, no, tell me how. Tell me how. Because once you know what it is that you have lost, you know, a sense of that perception or the, you know, the opportunity to make a good first impression, because as soon as you say I'm a Christian, kind of, I know what the first impression has already been made by countless other Christians or whatever the case might be, or, you know, that loss of cultural power or what we miss out on. Once you've identified that, then that allows you to then think through, okay, is it worth it? You can actually count the cost, as opposed to this kind of ambiguous, amorphous kind of cloud of, oh yeah, we have it so hard, which is why I think we jump to that whole, oh yeah, everyone's out to get us.
Yeah, we catastrophize.
And I think that, you know, one of the ways to not catastrophize, and this is true not just in this circumstance, but in any, is to kind of stop and go, okay, what's actually happened here? Right? And once you know what's happened, you can address the problem. So I think that's a good first step, to try to make sure that doesn't dominate our perception in some sort of vague way, but we're really clear about, okay, this is the cost for me. And then I think it's worth, you know, thinking through, I guess, what would be gained in those situations as well. Like, you know, particularly in the whole kind of what we miss out on, you know, what's really gained, you know, like, what am I really missing out on? Is it just good times with my friends, or is there something even more fundamental? Right. Then I think there'd probably be a scale of, you know, whether you go through the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, but that whole idea of there are some things that, you know, we can't live without, and some things that are kind of less important, and what's the cost. And then I think that perhaps the third thing is, you know, and I reckon that this is a little bit more abstract, but I hope it makes some concrete sense. Our sense of loss is determined by how much investment we put in on something. Right? So I watch hockey. I did.
Never heard you speak about it before.
No, well, this is the first time I've ever used an illustration on that.
Yeah.
So the other day I was watching Boston and somebody, and that tells you in and of itself that I didn't really care who won. Like, I wasn't invested. Neither of them are my team. So I just watched, and one team won, the other team lost. And I was like, oh, there you go. My team, though, I'm a little bit more invested. A loss means more, right? And then you kind of ramp it up, right? The more skin in the game you have, the more that loss hurts. And I think some of what we have to count the cost about is how much skin in the game are we willing to put in on Jesus's side, if that makes sense.
Wow, that's a huge.
Yeah, that's really big.
Yeah, because I think
that's
one of the things that we can do.
Right.
Yeah, well, one of the things we can do is we can end up not hedging our bets, but we don't make a bet. Now, I'm not sure that's the best image to use when we're talking about discipleship at all, but, you know, like, we don't put any skin in the game because I don't want to lose out. It's almost, you know, we're afraid to commit because of what might happen. Mm. And I think that's where we really need to be able to say, okay, how important is my relationship with Jesus? How important is it to participate with him in his kingdom? How much am I willing to put on his promises and go, yeah, I'm in. And that changes the dynamics of a win or a loss, right? Yeah. You know, personal loss is always harder to handle because it's personal.
Yeah.
You know, when you lose someone in your life, it's because you have a much stronger connection to them. Or when you, you know, I think we've all experienced this, you've gone for something, right? You've tried out for a team. You've tried out for a role in a school play. You've had a swing at that job interview. You've gone for it and you've missed out. And those are hard to get over because, oh, like I lost, I missed out. You know, the grand finals are harder to lose than a regular season game, right?
Yeah.
Because of what's on the line, the stakes. And I think that we have to be asking ourselves in part, what are we willing to put on the table in our pursuit of Jesus? You know, be clear about what it is that we stand to lose. Ask the questions of like, really, what are we missing out on? And I think, where does our investment lie? Like, be willing to... So I think this is part of what Jesus was saying to the church at Smyrna. They were willing to lose everything from the perspective of the world.
Mm.
They'd put it all on the table, right? Like there was nothing left. They had nothing in reserve. And so it was Jesus's promises or nothing. To use the betting imagery, they had not hedged their bets. They hadn't kind of go, okay, we'll put, you know, half on red and half on black.
Yeah.
They'd gone all in on Jesus. And that then changes our perspective as well. Because if we've done that, we've decided that this is worth it. This is worth it.
Yeah.
Whatever I might lose. And that's, I think that's the positive aspect of it. No, this is what I stand to gain.
Yeah.
It's worth putting my life in that.
Well, yeah. And just as you were speaking, like if you're asking the question, like how much skin am I going to put in the game? Like, and that can't be your focus. Otherwise you're constantly going to be
hedging your bets.
Well, yeah. Sweating it out.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like any minute now it's all gonna be swooped out from underneath me.
Yeah.
It's once you've decided to go all in, you do have to then shift focus to, well, what do I gain in Jesus? Because
what can I do to make this work?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, please let it work. No, absolutely. Because all of us, otherwise you are gonna live a life in fear of, well, this is what I'm going to lose. This is what I'm losing because of my faith. And actually I wonder, does that then develop a bit of bitterness, like, oh man, like this is what my faith cost me. And if that's the focus, is that really a place of loving Jesus and growing in your relationship with Jesus? Or is it just kind of constantly spending time focusing
that's
on,
good, yeah.
well, this is what it cost me.
So
just even as you kind of spoke that, I was like, oh, of course the focus needs to be on what we gain. Because the only, like, in my mind, the only answer, the question is not how much skin are you willing to put in the game.
Mm.
The question is, are you willing to put it all in or not? Like,
And I think, you know, coming back to, like, I think relationship is always so helpful for us when we're thinking about these sorts of issues, right?
Mm.
So when you got married to Sam, you did not spend your wedding day thinking to yourself, oh, I've missed out on so much. You know, look at all I've lost.
No, I did not.
No, of course you didn't. You're lucky
like,
to get her.
Punching above my weight. I've locked her in.
A couple weight classes, mate. A couple weight classes.
We all know it. We all know it.
And I only know because I can identify with people who are punching above their weight. You know, but there's I think that's really helpful as well to kind of go, like, this is a relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
It's not just a set of rules. And so to kind of to commit to Jesus is not to kind of go, oh man, I guess.
What a drag.
Yeah. Like, it's that whole all in piece, you know. And I think that's a helpful metaphor for us as well. Like, you know, we enter into relationships, you know, and Mark, myself and Nicole, or like whatever relationship you're in, even close friends. There's not some sense of, oh, you know, I've missed out so much if I'd had chosen other friends. You know, it's like, well, if you'd say, if that's an inside thought, if you ever think that, right? You know, but I think that's a really helpful way to think then about the, you know, the cultural loss. It's like, well, you know, following Jesus. So yeah, and a choice for one is automatically a choice against, which I think is one of the cultural reasons why we struggle with that, because we don't want to miss out on anything. And our world tells us we can have everything.
Yeah.
You can have it all, you can do it all. And Jesus basically, all through the book of Revelation in particular, is basically saying no. It's me or nothing.
Yeah.
Like there's not a lot of gray in Revelation. It is super black and white, which, you know, it's part of the apocalyptic genre. I'll talk about this Sunday. That's a teaser. You know, but,
a little free plug.
Yeah, that's right.
So, also, I think we need to choose Jesus every day. Like sometimes we can do a bit of a set and forget. Yes, I have given my faith. I'm fully dependent on the Lord. I'm going to lean on him. But this is a daily practice, you know.
Yeah.
And I think part of that, what you have to gain is when you are spending time with Jesus every day and he is, you know, the dearest relationship you have, the dependence you place on him, you're more secure in that because you know he's going to be there with you going through your life. It's not, as I said, set and forget one time thing. Yeah.
But it is a journey, I think.
It's a journey.
Yeah.
But it's your daily practices of spending time with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because our culture does tell us to focus on what we are losing and that FOMO. And what is countercultural is to focus on Jesus. Love it. Well, let's move on to question two.
It is, what does it actually look like to experience the promise of the victor's crown?
To actually experience the promise. I'm not sure you can experience a promise.
Can you experience the victor's crown? Or is it the
promise
of the victor's crown?
Maybe. Ooh. I mean, I think what I would say is the context of where the church at Smyrna was in the race is actually important. They were in it, right? So we've just talked about, you know, they were all in on Jesus.
Yeah.
And Jesus basically says, listen, just be faithful, like see it out. And the whole book of Revelation, because it's apocalyptic, it's Jesus's return is imminent, right? So there's an imminence all the way through the book. So there's a sense that they've come a long way. They've come a long way. And so I think that, I think one of the ways that we can kind of, deepen our, this isn't quite the question, but deepen our engagement with the promise is to kind of recognize how far we've come, to kind of go, okay, we've been in the race for a while. We're well on our way. You know, I think about sport, but you know, like, you know, whether it's club soccer or, you know, hockey, as the case might be, you know, like there's a sense that, you know, over the length of the season, you can see progression, you know, whether it be your local team as you kind of get better and better, or, you know, if it's a drama troupe or whatever, you know, getting closer and closer to actually being able to perform, or, you know, the ensemble kind of learning the piece of music, like there's progression through that. And so there's a growing sense of anticipation about the grand final, the presentation night, the gig, whatever it might be. And so I think that there's a sense for us of, you know, Jesus saying you'll be given the victor's crown. It's the winning thing, right? It was the crown given to the athletes who won at the Olympic Games, that kind of picture, right? So it's not a royal crown. It's the crown for winning. It's the gold medal. And you can imagine, you know, again, you think about athletes training for whenever the Olympics might be, you know, what an awful time to be an Olympian. But, you know, like there's a sense for them that they're getting closer and closer to their crack at the victor's crown.
Yeah.
You know, they can see the event drawing closer in their calendar. Their training is progressing along the way. They're, you know, tapering or whatever they do when they're swimming or whatever, that whole idea of getting ready to really get at it. And I think that's a helpful kind of metaphor to think about. I'm not sure how else we really experience the promise in that sense, because it is a promise for the future.
Yeah, and so. I guess that's, and I actually hadn't thought about it this way, but like, yeah, it's the thing that arrives when we've arrived. Like, we're never going to get it in this world. Whereas I guess we're so used to, you know, getting something quickly. But this is something that we're actually not going to see in this lifetime.
Yeah, and I think the other piece of it is, you know, to continue with the kind of sporting analogy, like for the church at Smyrna, I guess from the rest of the community of Smyrna, they were not winning. Like if you'd asked a pagan in Smyrna about the community of faith there, and said, are they winning at life? They'd be like, absolutely not. Mm. Jesus looks at them and kind of goes, you're killing it. Like, you're absolutely crushing it. Like, absolutely fantastic. And so I think we also need to continue to reflect on what's the point of the game we're playing. Like, what are the rules, right? Okay, you're beating me at you're beating me at chess, but I'm actually playing checkers. Yeah. So, like, can we really say, and just recognizing that, you know, what Jesus calls us to is a little bit countercultural, but it's so different, you know, a life of service and sacrifice and humility and love for others and all of those things that sit uncomfortably with our wider culture in lots of ways. So I think it's, you know, kind of recognizing we're playing a different game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it kind of got me thinking about Dylan, our incredible youth intern, was talking to me about this illustration that he was going to use in a message where he's got this long piece of rope and the one end has a bit of red tape on it.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, well, like this, the part of the rope that is taped red is your life on earth and the rest of the rope is everything else. And he goes, everyone is living for the red bit, but God has installed the rest of the rope. And I guess that's like, that's what came to mind as we were kind of talking, like it's a shift in perspective. And I guess that's how we experience the promise is, again, it's that countercultural, it's not allowing the perceptions and the ideas and the values of our world to shape the way we see things or, you know, disconnect us from Jesus because, you know, we need to understand that our game is on a different, is playing a different length. Mm. Like it goes for longer.
And to some degree, that is the message of Revelation. Mm. You know, Jesus is basically saying to the churches, play the long game.
Yeah.
Because it's actually, there's not much more time left.
Yeah.
Right? Play the long game.
Don't, if only they knew that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, don't play the short game. Don't kind of look at the circumstance and go, oh, I've just got to find a way to find a simple compromise. Jesus is like, that's going to end badly for you. Play the long game. Mm. Play the long game. And you know, it'll be a very up-to-date way of summarizing the entire book of Revelation, but I think that's exactly that point, right? Yeah. We're playing for different prizes. We're playing for on a different timeline.
Yeah.
And what looks like, you know, I think in one of the commentaries I read on Revelation, he talks about, you know, that this Revelation, Jesus is essentially saying this is injury time in a soccer game. You're up like 15-0. You cannot possibly lose in the next minute and a half, but your opponent are hacking you and tackling you illegally and the ref's letting them get away with it. Don't overreact. The whistle's about to go. Like, you can't lose from here. You just can't lose from here. But it, like, you know, if that behavior were, you know, on minute one, oh geez, we're in a whole heap of strife. So, you know, keep a perspective of where you're up to.
Yeah, and I guess the reality is that that's hard though.
Like, oh, totally.
It is absolutely hard to hold on to a promise that is yet to be fulfilled when your reality is challenging.
Yeah.
And I think obviously that's where a lot of people find themselves in that tension of, I know theoretically what I'm working towards in the sense of, you know, I know God and I know that he has a plan that is bigger than my existence on this earth. But I'm living my existence right now. And, you know, for whatever reason, it feels like the punches are coming every which way. And so, I don't know, this isn't the question, but I guess this helps to hold on to the promise. You know, how do we make that the promise of the victor's crown a reality for us in the now?
I don't know that there's an answer for that. Because if you could, then you wouldn't have to hold on. You wouldn't have to persevere. If I've already won, then that's called a rigged match, right? You know, and to some degree, it's rigged, right? Because we're on the side of Jesus. So, yeah, we're going to win, but we haven't won yet. You know, and one of the tensions, again, in the book of Revelation is that if you were to kind of, you know, do a advantages, disadvantages chart of, you know, what the empire offers and what Jesus offered, empire would have won hands down. They had the military, they had the infrastructure, they had the history of peace and prosperity, especially in that region of the world. The province of Asia Minor was very wealthy because of Rome's influence. So they had all the evidence. What did Jesus have? Died on a cross, apparently came back to life, but then just disappeared. You know, a bunch of ragtag followers from kind of nowhere on the economic spectrum. Like, really? Mm. You want to compare these two things? And Jesus is like, yeah. Stick with me.
Trust me, I'll win.
Yeah, well, you know, like the economics of it, you know, like it's, I think it's not, it's no accident that the city that comes down out of heaven at the end is made of gold. Mm. And it's like the size of continental Australia. That's how big the city is. Mm. If you think about Rome, very, very small, controlled a massive empire. How big is the empire that city is going to handle? Mm. It's going to handle everything. And there's so much gold, they use it for paving. Like, so you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
We found giant oysters. We made them into gates. I think we have to, it's not just kind of a, because God's really into gold, which I think would be a little bit gaudy, to tell you the truth, right? You know, like, you know, just golden streets. But it's just that whole Rome promises you wealth. You have no idea. Mm. You think Rome is impressive? Why do you get a little of this thing? Mm. We found a giant amethyst and thought we're just going to make a foundation out of that, because who needs amethysts anymore? You know, like, that is. It's a precious stone.
Thank you guys. I've not finished Bible college yet. Now, before I embarrass myself. It's in the last lesson. Excellent. Still got a few more years. Before I embarrass myself more, let's move on to question 3.
Okay, question 3 is, how do we live out the call of Jesus to be faithful?
And I think I probably have two levels to my answer, because I've said a couple times already in this series that Jesus's evaluation of the churches is very, very specific. Mm. So he doesn't care in the book of Revelation about their worship practices, right? So he doesn't kind of do the whole Paul thing about the Lord's Supper. Like, you're doing it wrong. Some of you getting drunk. Why are you doing that? like all that kind of stuff that happened in Corinth. Jesus isn't concerned with the inner practices of the church, their worship practices or whatnot. And the one thing he's focused on is that public witness. That's the only evaluator we're given in the book of Revelation, which does not mean that that's the only thing the church does. Mm. But it just reminds us that that's part of it. So I think that the simplest answer in the context of Revelation is we are faithful in public, right? Mm-hmm. We want to demonstrate our love for Jesus and our love for others, which is derived from our love for Jesus publicly. So people, you know, as I said in the first week, can convict us of being Christians, can draw the line and kind of go, wait a minute, you're one of those Christians. Mm-hmm. So I think that in the book of Revelation, that's the simplest way to do it. Now, I don't think that has to do with kind of necessarily talking about our faith more, but just being really deliberate about acting out our faith, the embodiment of what Jesus was about. Mm. We may never get the opportunity, you know, in our context, it's often hard to get to those conversations about Jesus, but to be a demonstration of what we believe about him, that's something I think within the reach of everybody. I think more broadly in Scripture, you'd have a broader answer, right? Just like the church is about more than just the public witness, I think your faithfulness to Jesus would have a broader context as well. You know, you talk about the laws and those sorts of things. And, you know, I think faithfulness is about, you know, recognizing who we're in relationship with and living appropriately, mm-hmm. right? You know, I'm in relationship with God. It's probably some things I need to do to reflect that relationship and, you know, get after it. So that is kind of quite specific and quite broad. I'm not sure how helpful that is, but
I guess, like, because again, this is one of those Christian things that we talk about. Yeah. But I know as a young Christian myself, that my approach to things was very much like, I need, like, and I know that I've since learned that faith is not a formula, unfortunately. but you know, we live in a very specific kind of cultural context at this in this moment in time. And I think, you know, people out there, Christians out there are looking for something that they can kind of hold on to and kind of go, okay, like, I want to remain faithful to Jesus. I know what that means, big picture, broadly speaking, but like, what does that actually look like in my day to day? Yes, it means I can just demonstrate Jesus' love in the way that I live, but like, is there not more to it than that?
Yeah, rocks. What do you think? While you talk, I'll do some more thinking. No, you know, but because I think you're right, yeah. Matt. Like there are more specific things, and you know, some of it has to do with obedience, right? But I think faithfulness is a better way to think about obedience. Mm. You know, being faithful to wedding vows is different than obeying them, but similar. They're kind of on that same spectrum in some sort of a way. But faithfulness speaks to relationship, where obedience speaks strictly, almost exclusively to duty.
Yeah.
And while duty has a role in relationships, if your whole relationship is based on duty, then you're in a whole heap of trouble.
Yeah. Right?
So I think that there's that component. Of being faithful to Jesus. I think, you know, I know I invited you to speak and then started speaking, so there's an irony right there.
Classic radio.
Classic. Is it? Yes, it is. Okay. Let's move on from that uncomfortable truth. But I think that, you know, one of the things that we need to do, and I think this is, again, one of the things that the book of Revelation does is most of the action takes place from heaven's perspective, right? So, John gets taken up to heaven in chapter 4, and the rest of the book he's in heaven. And looking down from the perspective of heaven, things are so much clearer. Mm. Right? So, you know, the church at Smyrna was experiencing the same levels of ambiguity that we are. Right? They didn't see the devil behind, like it wasn't literally the devil dragging them off into prison, but Jesus names that's who's ultimately behind it.
Yeah.
From the perspective of heaven, there are only two groups of people. There's no black, there's no gray. It's all black and white. Mm-hmm. You're either sealed for the Lamb or you're marked for the beast. That's it. And so there's this real stark kind of call for believers to kind of go, oh, I probably need to be a little bit more discerning.
Yeah.
Right? I need to be a little bit more discerning. So there's a couple places, you know, like the famous 666 passage. And you've heard the number. You're familiar with the number?
All right. Yep.
Well, the kind of the only part of that passage that's really clear is the bit where it says, "Let those who have wisdom like be discerning in this." Right. And you're like, "Oh, okay, wisdom." And I think that there's a call in the Book of Revelation for Christians to open their eyes, to actually look and see what's going on. Like, what's actually going on? Because I think sometimes we don't think enough about what it means to be faithful to Jesus. Yeah. And we just kind of get swept along with our regular life, and we don't kind of think about, you know. And so, you know, an example of an area where I think we've started to think about it is, say, in ethical clothes shopping.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, Baptist World Aid and other organizations have done lots of good work in that space. And I think more people are going, you know what? Buying clothes is not just buying clothes. Mm. It's actually, as a follower of Jesus, an act of discipleship. Our eyes have been opened to that. And I think that encourages us to ask questions about not only what we're wearing, but what else we buy, you know, like kind of good rule of thumb. If the price is too good to be true, someone's probably been hurt by it. Mm. You know, like if you can buy something that's unbelievable for $9.99, what's happened there? So I think just being a little bit more aware of what's happening in our world can also be really helpful to help us maintain faithfulness to Jesus in that sense. So. Rocks, now that I've thought and spoken, let me ask you again if you were going to say
all of that.
I totally was. Yeah, I kind of was, actually. I was thinking.
Yes, got in first.
Well, I would say it differently, of course. But, yeah, just looking, trying to put yourself above your own life and looking at your life through the lens of Christ and through the lens of Jesus, which is kind of what you're saying with the perspective of heaven. Like, what are the things that Christ values? Are they the things that I, you know, value? Am I allowing them to inform what I do in my daily practices? You know, are there people that Jesus is valuing that I'm just looking over? You know, are there relationships that Jesus wants me to lean into and I'm kind of like just too hard basket, you know, glossing over them. People that I might pass by that are hurting and I have the power to do something to help them, to, you know, just speak a kind word to them. And that might be something that I can, in my little, you know, busy life, be faithful to Jesus in that moment. And am I so busy sort of looking at the big picture of like, how is my whole life being faithful to Jesus that I actually neglect the small stuff and those little tiny things, because, you know, our life is a bit like Lego. You know, we are made up of little tiny elements and little tiny moments that make a whole big picture. And, sometimes I'm guilty of just kind of thinking that's too hard, it's too big, it's too impossible. I can't do anything, as you said, about, you know, fashion worldwide, but I have a little piece of power and I have a little moment and I have a little bit of money and I can channel that in a way that is faithful to Jesus in the small stuff. And you preached on Sunday, and I'm going to keep going because you've stopped talking, but you preached on Sunday about the servants who were given their amounts, and they were all given different amounts, and it was those who were faithful in the economic sense who doubled their money, who actually put it into use, that God said, well done, good and faithful servant. It was the person who just kind of held it and almost was paralyzed with fear. You know, they just held onto it and buried their talent. They had it taken away from them. So for me, faithfulness is, what's in my hand? What's God given me to use? How am I going to be faithful in the small stuff? Because God then says, when you're faithful with the small stuff, I'm going to give you the big stuff. That's my bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the two things are related. Because I think, say, the fashion industry is a reasonable example of that. Because until you have your eyes opened to what's happening, I never would have thought of what I buy, like a pair of jeans or a shirt or whatever, as being anywhere something in my hand that I could use for Jesus. And I think that there's kind of that 30,000 foot in the ground level, you know. And I think, again, in the book of Revelation, it's about the imperial cult and, you know, the propaganda around the emperors and all that sort of stuff, and just kind of unmasking it and kind of going, you know what, it's not what it looks like. And then you're challenged to then say exactly that. Well, so what's in my hand to do?
What's in my hand?
How do I then handle that as well? So, yeah.
Boom. Well, this week's big three has been a bit of a mind mess. Like, I'm just, my head hurts. I don't know. Is it just me? It is. You're both sitting there like, I have understood everything that we've discussed, and I'm here like, I don't even know who I am anymore.
Well, you are just back from a long weekend away, though. So we'll
give a little bit of grace.
We'll throw you a little bit of grace this time.
But there'll be a quiz tomorrow. Well, Raider, thanks so much for joining us for this week's big three.
Pleasure.
Well, Rox, before we wrap up for today, this week, this episode, I felt like a lot was discussed there, a lot was unpacked, and like some really big ideas and big topics that could have, I think you even said at one point, like being a podcast in and of itself. What is sticking out for you, having just chatted with Raider now, unpacked those three questions?
I think the concept of sacrifice is actually sticking out to me for some reason. Wow. Like that, you know, am I all in for Jesus? Because then I have to, like, God calls us to be living sacrifices, right? To live our lives and put away the old person, the old man, so to speak, and become the new man / person in modern language. So the idea of letting go, sacrificing maybe what I want and being all in with Jesus, that's a good conviction. It makes me think of this Bonhoeffer quote. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was this German dude in the 1940s who was killed for his opposition to Hitler. He was martyred. And he says, when Jesus calls a person, he bids them to come and die. And that's literally what he says. And so for me, it's like, yes, I've got to let that go because Jesus is good. Jesus is worth it. Let's, you know, eyes on the prize, so to speak.
Yeah.
Jesus is the prize.
Yeah.
He's the crown. Nothing else matters. Nothing else is as good.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think for me, like, I'm really wrestling with the whole, have I really spent enough, do I spend enough regular time in my, you know, daily walk to really sow into the relationship that I have with Jesus? Yeah, I think everything that we've kind of discussed today, it's having a relationship with Jesus, not just knowing him, not just saying, you know, yes, I like, I'm going to believe in him, but actually kind of going, actually, I'm going to invest in my relationship with him and deepening and growing that relationship, because without that, I'm not going to put skin in the game. Without that, I'm not going to be faithful. Without that, like, and I felt a sense of conviction that actually, I think I just can so easily kind of go through the motions. But if I'm not investing in my own personal relationship with Jesus, then the rest won't really grow.
Yeah. You're going to get drift.
Yeah. And, or it'll just become legalistic, or so. Yeah, I'm just kind of, again, and this is a shameful free plug, and I'm just going to name it for what it is. But like, again, like the discipleship menus that we're doing each week coming out of every message during this series, like I did it last week. We discussed it as a life group in our life group. And again, I think they're really helpful tools to kind of just kind of come in and just kind of, spend some one-on-one time with Jesus, just kind of invest in that personal relationship of our discipleship. So if you're out there and you're listening, you should go onto the GBC website and download this week's discipleship menu.
It's a smorgasbord.
It is a smorgasbord of delight, I dare say. Well, Rox, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here.
If you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure you're there at one of our services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.